Welcome to episode 7 of the Over the Counter podcast. I'm Mark Giestrick.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
Today we're recording our podcast in a slightly different format. I'm actually sitting literally at the counter where Andrew is standing behind the counter.
You are taking part in the milieu, if you will, that gave birth to this podcast, where Mark comes and sits and gets a coffee, and I sit and talk to him, and we ended up deciding to record these things. But today, we're going to be talking about coffee. We're going to be talking about coffee as a context for community and about the craft of coffee.
So what more appropriate location could you have than an actual coffee bar at which to discuss coffee?
So just so you know what you're signing on for today, we're alive, we're open. And so you may hear pauses while I make a drink. You may listen to me make a drink while I'm still talking.
And you might hear the refrigerator in the background that has burritos and donuts in it.
If you hear the... that's the refrigerator. Because we are, in fact, live. No, we're in a studio and we brought a refrigerator in to make it sound like... We got a sound maker to make an espresso machine I'm turning on right now. That's not really a La Marzocco Linnea. So...
Yeah.
It's one of those radio guys.
To me, it sounded like an Italian musical term, like Andante, but
it's like,
I don't know.
It's like those, like on a Prairie Home Companion or whatever, they got the guy that's like the old time radio sound effects guy that can make any sound.
Right, yeah, with a shoebox and a small little door that he slams shut.
I love when he tries to stump him, when he can come up with anything and he doesn't know what he's going to come up with. He goes... And then they parachuted in, and he does that on camels, and he has to like with castanets. It's like, and he has to come up with something on the fly. That's my favorite part of that show.
Well, which show is this?
Yeah, Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, yeah.
Garrison Keillor. Yeah. All right, so yeah,
it's not my favorite radio in the world.
Well, I mean, you know. NPR has its strengths.
You also have a book sale going on today, Andrew.
We do, down here at Total Elijah Coffee Bar at 6160 South Syracuse Way in beautiful downtown Greenwood Village, Colorado.
There's a downtown?
I don't think there is.
Yeah.
In the Denver Tech Center. We have 3 books for $1. And we probably will have, because we're posting this Monday. So if you hear this Monday, come down. We're open till 6.
I don't know. They might all be gone by then. Somebody's going to walk in with $20 and buy them all.
Jared tried.
Yeah, right? Well, exactly, right?
Yeah, you have 40 books a day. All the Harvard classics.
All right. So I am a mere novice in coffee drinking. I thought that I was a coffee connoisseur until I met you, Andrew.
Well, and it's funny. And I'm not a real coffee geek. I play one in real life. But there's people who know so much more than me.
And I mean, I thought I was a coffee connoisseur because I ground my own beans at home.
Well, okay.
Right? And I knew that there were things that tasted better than Starbucks. And
you home roasted, too.
It's true. It's true.
So, I mean, you were definitely above the average.
Although, I have to tell you, so my popcorn air popper broke.
Oh.
So I can't use it to roast anymore. I had to throw it away. So I have to get a new one, I guess.
You should get they have like, there's like a few of them that are like in the under $200 range that are home roasters.
Okay, yeah, but I got my air popper for $2.75.
Well, yeah, but I'm telling you that there's home roasters that are, and my friend Dwayne Schaaf.
It's a lot easier to spend $2.75 than $200.
My friend Dwayne Schaaf has a company called Kaleidoscope Coffee in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and he was my roaster in my last cafe. He's a chef and a craft brewer. You guys should meet. You guys love a lot of the same things. And he was roasting in his backyard on a rig that you convert a gas grill into a drum roaster.
Okay, I thought we were going to save roasting techniques for another
right,
podcast.
Yeah.
We got to get into espresso.
Podcast on roasting.
Right? Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about what Andrew does back here behind the bar when he's not pontificating about espresso and lattes and how Starbucks is a word that ought not to be mentioned.
No, actually, we are going to talk about exactly what I do while I'm doing those things. We're going to talk about what I'm not doing when I'm pontificating about.
Okay, so here, why don't we start at a very, very easy point, right? I have a cappuccino maker at home. Okay, and so in theory, I can make espresso at home. What's the difference between what I can accomplish with my $200 cappuccino machine at home and what you can do here?
Well, For starters, you can call it. You can't call this a cappuccino machine. There's no such thing as a cappuccino machine. There's an espresso machine, and you use espresso machine to make espresso drinks, one of which is a cappuccino. Well, the difference is, it used to be a really hard, distinct difference. You could only do pump-driven so cheap, and there was only so much you can do to a machine.
Okay, we don't know what pump-driven is. You have to tell us. You have to instruct us in that.
Well, whether or not it actually has a mechanical pump that amplifies the pressure in the group. Thank you. See you later. Whether or not it actually has a mechanical pump that amplifies it to 9 bar, like 9 times atmosphere, 130, 140 PSI, that if it doesn't have that kind of a mechanical pump, it's technically speaking not making espresso. But there's only so cheap...
Wait, bar is an acronym, right?
Bar?
Isn't it like barometric atmosphere or something?
I don't know.
Yeah. You don't know what it is?
I don't. I told you I'm not a real coffee geek.
You just use the expression 9 bar in the context of a sentence.
9 bar.
And you're not able to tell me what a bar is.
It is. 9 bar is about 130
PSI. This is why Wikipedia exists.
Yeah, it's like barometric. Yeah, it's 9 times barometric. Yeah, barometric pressure is like atmosphere, right? So yeah, so it's 9 barometric, atmospheric, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I just know how to make things taste good with a La Marzocco and an old Mazur grinder.
Okay, but what is espresso? Okay. I mean, how is it different than coffee?
Well...
I mean, I know it's more concentrated. It comes in a smaller cup.
Here's where I'm going to get all Alton Brown / David Schomer on you here. Espresso is a polyphasic system. It exists simultaneously as an emulsion, a suspension, a liquid, and a foam. How's that for?
That was like something out of my high school chemistry class.
It is. It's
only worse.
Espresso is 4 things at once. Here, while talking, I'll pull an espresso shot. So,
okay, now why do you pull shots rather than push them or drop them or whatever?
Well, I guess you could say you're pushing them, but we call them pull. Call it pulling, probably because the original espresso machines were lever machines, and you would actually pull down the lever and then let it go. Like, you'll still see that in some bars.
Huh. Kind of like a slot machine?
Kind of, yeah.
So, but the distinction is, when you brew coffee, it's usually some sort of dripping, right? Or infusion or whatever, right?
Yeah. This is using... So I'm putting about 18 grams of finely ground coffee into this little basket inside this thing with a handle that's called the...
Which I have to say is bigger than the basket on my home espresso maker.
Right, so you can't get the proper amount of coffee in, most likely. So I'm going to put it into this machine in the place that they call the group, right, which is where that goes in. And it's nice and tight, snug against a gasket. Now I'm going to hit this button in the middle, which is going to do a pre-infusion, and then it's going to activate the pump, right? So what it does is it lets the hot water at about 202, 201 degrees come through at the same city water pressure. Like city line pressure, but then once you hit that pump activates, you go up to the aforementioned 9 bar.
Okay, and I did just look up the unit of measurement, the bar, which comes from the Greek word baros. So it's not an acronym.
Well, there you go.
And baros means weight in Greek.
See, I told you.
So what's interesting, though, is that you can have a bar,
that's probably where they get barometric
a
pressure.
Kilobar, a megabar, a decibar, a centibar, a millibar. So
okay, so let's get the espresso. All you listeners, look at it. Oh, right. Wait a minute. We're not a video.
It looks kind of like Guinness.
Yeah, and okay. So it's got...
So it's very dark.
So that thing on the
dark brown, and then it has the crema.
The crema, which is kind of a deep reddish brown. Okay, so this crema is the fats. They're not really fats, because they're technically carbohydrates, because they're water. They call them coffee oils. They're emulsified. They're created into this little suspension.
Right? So when I make espresso,
this little microscopic bubbles. Right?
When I make espresso at home, it looks sort of like this, right. But the crema is not as thick. Right. The bubbles are not as small.
Right.
It's just a kind of different experience. It's right. kind of so like this, a wannabe. espresso.
Yeah, and so this wasn't a great shot that I just pulled. So
Andrew put it in a nice glass Gibraltar cup for me,
so that we could see it, right?
Yeah.
So you've got this dark part here,
and now he's using a baby spoon to point to it.
What's a demitasse spoon? So demitasse, which is French for baby, evidently. So there's this dark part here is a liquid, and it's got coffee solids in it. So it's a liquid with a suspension. Okay,
then like that's paint.
What. Now that would be what brew coffee is, right?
Right. Sure.
Now, but then this foam that's got this emulsified little emulsified bubbles, right? That will. So then, if I drink that, what causes the aftertaste? And what causes that lingering taste? You can taste a properly pulled espresso shot faintly up to 30 minutes after you drink it straight. Because every once in a while, one of those microscopic bubbles will pop on your tongue and release its little flavor. Now, some people have started...
What if you rinse your mouth out afterwards?
Well, then it's going to kill it.
Okay.
Okay, a lot of people... Some people have started actually skimming this crema off.
And eating it with a baby spoon?
No. Getting rid of it because it has a different flavor. But what you should
do... Because all they want is the dark brown stuff. They don't want the crema.
Right. And that's... So then what you should do...
That seems...
If you're going to drink an espresso, though, people sit and sip an espresso and stuff. If you're not going to drink an espresso all in one drink... So that you're tasting both parts of it all together, then you should stir it. Stir that crema.
Okay, Andrew is now actually stirring it, which to me looks like he's ruining it, but maybe not. It doesn't look as cool anymore. Now it's all mixed together.
And
he just slugged about half of it as if it were wine and did like the swish around in your mouth thing. You didn't spit. You're supposed to spit, right? It's like swish and spit,
I'm tired.
Right? Oh, okay.
I wanted the caffeine. So, yeah, I just kind of aerated it a little bit, kind of just out of habit, because I was like from tasting wine for so many years. I was a wine steward for like 6 years. So,
aerating it means that you put it in your mouth and then suck in. That's the sound that it makes. It's very.
I don't know if you can hear that. That's me drawing air over it, and it's kind of going over the tongue and making bubbles in it. And then it kind of like you do wine. And so that kind of opens it up a little bit. So I drink that straight espresso. That was pretty good, actually.
Do all liquids that you taste need to be opened up?
No.
Okay.
Not all of them respond to oxygen.
No.
Not all wine needs to be opened up. Some wine is too open. It's a little over the hill, right? It's got too much oxygen. So... by the way, I should say we're using the Espresso Novo from Novo Coffee Roasters in Denver, Colorado. And so that nice deep red crema. It's got kind of a nice bright flavor. It's not a big brightness bomb.
No, okay, so this is something we should talk about briefly about espresso.
Do you want espresso taste?
I was thinking we might save it for your special drink, but we'll see.
Okay.
Your signature drink.
My signature drink.
Yeah.
I have a signature drink.
You have a signature drink that you created.
Oh, well, I've got a couple of signature. Yeah, I guess I've got a couple of signature drinks on
the menu. But hang on. Before we even get there, what I wanted
to
say...
Those are just drinks I made.
What I wanted to say was that...
Sick drinks.
There's a difference between the espresso that you're serving and the espresso that you would have gotten at Starbucks or anywhere else 10 years ago.
Of course.
Okay, yeah. And to me, as a novice coffee drinker person, the main difference is traditional espresso is always very dark. It's always very Italian. It has that kind of Swedish... Not Swedish, but sweet-ish kind of flavor. And the
sweet, huh?
Kind of dark and sweet, I guess is what I'm...
Yeah,
okay. And the espresso that is more trending right now is brighter, meaning usually a slightly lighter roast, right?
Yeah.
Has more kind of like fruity notes and things like this, rather than that kind of real deep, rich kind of flavor.
Right. So okay,
it's like a different flavor profile. So we're in the realm of like orange and lemon and I don't know.
Well, hopefully we're not going to get quite to lemon, orange, peel maybe. Okay.
But not in the realm of like dark chocolate and those sorts of things.
Yeah, Starbucks and all the coffee roasters in America So you said it's that dark and Italian.
Oh, sorry.
But see, there's the problem, is that in Italy, espresso's not that dark. Even down in Naples, you're not going to find... It's dark. The farther south you go, the darker it gets. You would have to go all the way to Sicily to find something as dark as what Americans call Italian roast. If you served what most people call Italian roast in America to an Italian, they would spit it back at you. The bulk of the coffee consumed in Italy is like Ely's Normale roast. Maybe, and then down the farther south to get into like the Scudo and from Ely, none of that is as dark as what we call Italian roast. So that's a misnomer. That's something American marketers came up with.
Yeah.
Right? Now, you look at these beans here. There's Espresso Novo from Novo Coffee.
And they're relatively light. I mean, I've roasted my own coffee. These are not super dark beans.
There's a hint. A couple of them have a hint of oil starting to fleck. Inside the first week.
Right, but this is not like second crack super dark coffee.
This is probably right at the beginning of the second crack.
Yeah.
So explain that, Mark.
Well,
coffee cracks wise.
Okay, so coffee is basically like popcorn, right? So when you throw it in a roaster or whatever, which is basically like a glorified popcorn popper, or you can actually use a regular popcorn popper, it roasts for a while and then you hear pop, 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 like popcorn pops. And then if you let it roast longer, you'll hear pop, 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 pop again. So it actually cracks twice.
Right.
And when at first crack, so if you see raw coffee beans, they're green. At first crack, the outer shell kind of pops right off and gets out of the roaster if it's...
And that's the chaff.
Right, the chaff. And then at second crack, the bean actually kind of like changes a little bit.
Kind of puffs up and pops,
Yeah.
Well, now the thing is, though, is that...
So this would be like
most
what, full city
most
roast?
Coffee roasters, most commercial coffee roasters are not like a popcorn popper, though.
Yeah.
That would be Civet's fluid bed roasting. A guy named Civet's, you know, fluid bed roasting or hot air roasting. And that's the great minority in America. Most of them are what's called drum roasters. So if you get like a Probot is one of the most popular brands for roasting. It's a German machine, I believe. And then there's a new one from the same people who were making Probots before called Giessen. And there's the San Franciscan and these, but they're all a drum. Like picture your dryer,
And we'll do a whole podcast just on roasting.
Flame on the on a steel drum,
right?
An iron drum that's rotating,
yeah.
Right, so it's different than the fluid bed thing. So
but you still have the crack happen, right?
Of course, yeah. So at the second crack, these things have changed over the years, but you start defining. Dark. Sometimes you hear like, you know, American roast, city plus, full
right.
city. We don't
right.
really use those kind of phrases anymore. And something you also have to understand is we used to really roast on how dark is it, and that was the question. But now we understand, and they always kind of understood different roasters, but there's a whole science. Did you start it off low and then increase the heat? Did you start with it hot and decrease it as you got towards the second crack? There's different ways to get to the same color. Even if the color is uniform throughout, there's different ways to ramp or to drop down or whatever.
Yeah.
And that causes different chemical reactions in the coffee that will actually cause different flavors. I mean, it'll amplify sweetness or it'll amplify other flavors. It'll cover some flavors. And so it's
one of the things worth mentioning.
It is definitely certainly lighter than most coffee that you would see.
Yeah. I think one of the things worth mentioning, go ahead, is that the appearance of this coffee, the beans are rather small, and you're not seeing a large amount of oil on the outside. Like if you go to the store and you find the darkest coffee that they sell, you'll notice that the container that it's in is very oily, and that each one of the beans has this kind of sheen on it
right.
because it's very oily because the oil's been released through the roasting process at that second crack stage.
And like other sheens, like Charlie Sheen, it's kind of bitter, you know. But it's got tiger's blood running through its veins.
I'm glad that at least you laugh at your jokes.
Winning! It's been a while since we brought out the Charlie Sheen references in modern culture.
Oh my goodness. All right, so that's a really small bean.
Yes, there's a lot of African in this coffee. They're roasting Bellicato Ethiopian right now, so I'm assuming those little small ones look like they're probably the Bellicato Ethiopian.
Okay. Now, is most espresso single origin or no?
No. The modern espressos were really turning towards starting to mess with single origin a lot.
Right, but traditionally,
an option.
It's traditionally
it's been blends.
Yeah. So the difference, right, between a single origin and a blend, right? Single origin comes from one place, one plantation, one farm, in theory, right? Or at least one region, at the least.
Right.
And a blend. You literally have a taster guy sitting around being like, I think we need to put in like 2 pounds of this coffee and 1 pound of that coffee and 3 pounds of that coffee.
Right.
He mixes them together and tastes it and decides this tastes good and we'll mix these coffees in these ratios in order to achieve X flavor.
Right, because you're trying to balance flavors together, give complexity and balance. But it's funny, a lot of these blends that have like up to 9 coffees in it. There's a blend by Sweet Maria's that does a lot of home roasting, and they've got a wholesale arm called Coffee Shrub, and I think it's called Espresso Monkey. And this Espresso Monkey is, he jokingly talks about how there's like this a monkey. You might as well put a monkey in the room, have him sling a bunch of coffee beans around as many coffees as are in this. And so he kind of does something a little different than that. So and so that's just funny. But then it's funny, blending is actually making a comeback. It's interesting. We've gone so far to the single origin and so far towards like brightness and all that in espresso.
Wait, we haven't talked about milk at all. Can we talk about milk?
I thought we were talking about espresso. What's milk have to do with espresso?
Well, okay.
Oh, I forgot we're in America. We have to...
Most of the drinks that you make and that most of the drinks that people order at a coffee shop have milk in them.
Exactly.
And...
You are correct.
The milk dramatically affects the flavor.
It does, yeah. And so there's the thing is that you can get a single origin of coffee that is really pretty and all this brightness and weird kind of like notes to it, graham cracker and dried apple and all this. And then you put it in as little as 4 or 6 ounces of milk and make a traditional cap, and it just disappears.
Yeah.
It just tastes like milk.
Right.
So it's always kind of...
Well, and this is like one of your big criticisms of the drinks at your typical like mass market coffee shop is that the espresso to milk ratio is all wrong, right?
Yeah, it's way too much milk, and they have to get it through that much milk. They have to go really dark. One of the reasons why Starbucks...
Or Caribou or any other places.
These mass market espressos are so dark... is they want to put a single shot in a 12-ounce cafe latte.
Because very few people actually order the espresso just as is, right?
Or do they order the traditional sizes,
right?
The smaller...
Well, let's talk through the traditional sizes of the drinks, right? And traditional espresso is what, 1 ounce, 2 ounces?
A traditional single shot is going to be an ounce, right around. An espresso ristretto is going to be an ounce or less than an ounce. Espresso lungo, where a long pour is going to be an ounce to an ounce and a half for a single shot. We pull double shots. I pull fairly ristretto, usually 2 ounces or less. So most of the time, like I brew by weight when I'm checking the machine and stuff. And so I do roughly 18, roughly I'm pulling 18 grams of coffee, and I'm pulling.
Okay,
like
now what about like a cappuccino?
I'm starting with 18 grams of grounds, and I'm going about a couple ounces, But sometimes I'll go, you can go as high as like a 32 to 40 gram shot sometimes, depending on the blend.
Yeah.
I mean, how much by weight, espresso by weight, the liquid by weight afterwards. So that could be an ounce and a half,
Okay, tell me about cappuccino. How big should a cappuccino be?
Well, I can just tell you what we do. In-house, we make a fairly big cappuccino compared to... This is our cappuccino cup. It's an 8-ounce cup. I usually don't fill it quite all the way.
Right.
There's the sound of a real cappuccino cup on real marble. And now here is...
Now that all of our listeners' ears are bleeding, we can continue with the discussion.
Here is a traditional Italian cup. This traditional Italian cup is a... This is like a 5-ounce cup right here. And it would be a single shot in a 5-ounce. And that's what, for the USBC, the United States Barista Competition, the cappuccino round, your cappuccino has to be a single shot of espresso in a 5-ounce cup. So,
but at Starbucks, right? If you order a single shot espresso or a cappuccino, we're talking about like a 12-ounce cup.
Could be a 16 or 20-ounce cup,
right?
Their definition of a cappuccino. Well, this is going to get us into milk, because their definition of a cappuccino is espresso with equal parts steamed milk and milk foam. So think about what I just said, steam milk and milk foam. If I said cow and grass or car and building, there's a distinction between the steam milk and the milk foam.
For them, the steam milk is basically a liquid.
And the
foam is
a meringue, basically.
Sure.
It's a big froth. It's a big
froth. Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't do that. We do the more Italian style, which is you use certain techniques to make it all one wet, pourable foam. Which, I'm gonna get off the brown on you again. They would call it chemists would call this a microbubble lattice. It's a three-dimensional lattice work of microscopic bubbles, right? And the a chef would just call it a chiffon. That's what I call it, a velvety, creamy chiffon, right? So it's a wet, horrible foam, and it will separate into a liquid and something a little thicker if you let it sit. But we're not trying to get it to separate. We're trying to keep it from separating. And if you'll ever go into, you see this picture? The top is smaller than the bottom.
He's holding a little stainless steel milk picture.
And so if you go in any good modern coffee shop, this is the kind of picture you're going to see. You go to a Starbucks, you're going to see the exact opposite. You're going to see pitchers that are bigger on top and smaller on the bottom because they're wanting to separate foam.
Huh.
It's hard to make the kind of foam I make in a pitcher that's shaped wrong. And it's hard. I can't barely make Starbucks foam if somebody wants it.
Yeah.
In this kind of pitcher, because it wants to whirlpool and combine. And that's why it's designed this way. So do you want to steam some milk and talk about that? Or okay. So basically, you're going to combine. There's these different milks. There's these different ratios of milk to espresso. So in our bar, we're a fairly modern third wave kind of bar. You take a little shot of espresso, you put a little splash of steamed milk chiffon on it. That's an espresso macchiato. Not the weird thing Starbucks sells and calls macchiato. Macchiato means to mark or to stain in Italian.
Right.
So you're staining espresso with milk.
With a tiny bit of milk.
Which is funny is that they're making an Italian drink too. They're making a latte macchiato where you're staining milk with espresso. But that's what you order in Italy if you want a latte. So they have latte in two places on their menu because they're trying to use the word and make it sound cool. But before that, for years, if you just asked for a macchiato for short, just like, hey, give me a macchiato, let me have a mock. That was espresso macchiato. So then in our bar, we have a West Coast drink called a Gibraltar, also called a Cafe Cortado on our menu, which is roughly equal parts espresso and milk in a little 4-ounce cup, right? Then if you come up to a double shot inside of an 8-ounce cup, that is, okay, so evidently we're going to continue the coffee podcast after. Now that we're just down to the crux, we're going to make some drink. I guess we'll do part two.
Well,
anyway, so you're going to put these different amounts of milk on the same double shot, anywhere from 4, 8 to 12 ounces. And then you can add some stuff to it, like dark chocolate ganache or something to make it a cafe mocha, blah, 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 blah.
Well, there's a lot here, right? And this is your whole profession. So we've got a long way to go in terms of getting to the bottom of what coffee is all about. But I think we've at least scratched the surface of the espresso.
Let me just say,
cappuccino
for purposes,
discussion,
just,
right?
Let me just say, for the purposes of this podcast, I am more interested in the environment that you can make with coffee and with the craft and the hospitality around coffee.
Right.
And you can do that in a Starbucks, because I've done it in a Starbucks and a Barnes & Noble when I was a kid and created real community around bad coffee. And you can do that. Because ultimately, it's about
persons. We'll talk directly about that maybe next time or whatever.
Yeah.
We also need to talk about brewing methods. We need to talk about home roasting, all kinds of stuff.
You're going to scare the non-coffee people, the non-culinary ones off.
Okay, we'll have to talk about coffee in every episode. But I think it's worth talking
about
sometimes.
Yeah, I think every 5 or 6 episodes, you're going to get a culinary geeks one. Every 5 or 6,
the things you need to bring away from this podcast is that steamed milk ought to be a microbubble lattice, and that espresso is simultaneously a liquid and an emulsion and something else all at the same time, right?
No.
No.
But yeah, you want to don't separate your milk, don't burn your milk, don't go over 150 Fahrenheit, or you'll kill all the proteins and cause sweetness.
And don't separate your steamed milk from your foamed milk.
Yeah,
they should all be one
thing.
They should be one happy family of milk.
Don't use burnt coffee. Pull your shots to a couple of ounces in around 25 seconds.
So basically, you can come away from this with like a list of rules as to like how to properly curate an espresso beverage.
Keep listening, and we'll start doing. We'll do some more coffee podcasts if you're into it. If not, put comments on Facebook on the podcast and say, stop talking about coffee. We want to hear you argue about God's will some more.
So
we'll do that.
I have enjoyed listening to Andrew pontificate about all things espresso-oriented. I don't quite understand all of this, but it sounds really interesting when he talks about it. So thank you
You're welcome.
For knowing all of these things and then releasing your knowledge into the atmosphere for all of us to enjoy. I hope to learn a lot more the next time we talk about coffee.
And if you want to know more about coffee, or if you wanted a coffee house built, hypothetically, you could go to any number of websites on Google. CalixCoffee.com being one of them. CalixCoffee.com.
Okay, after such a shameless promotional plug, even though...
my website on the podcast.
Even though I know that all of you will cry into your improperly brewed espresso drinks that you bought from Starbucks, when we say it, this is the end of Episode 7 of the Over-the-Counter Podcast. I'm Mark Giesecheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.